Well, good morning. Good to have you here again. I think it's going to be a good day. So let's rejoice in the Lord. That song, Thou Art Worthy. And the first one, who is like Jehovah God? That's the fear of God. Who is like unto Him? And He is worthy. If you read on down in Revelation from 4:11 to 5, Revelation 5:9, it says they sung a new song. You ponder, what was the new song? Thou art worthy is a song of praise to God and of creation and all that. The new song is a song of the redeemed. And only the redeemed can sing it. Can you sing that song this morning? He is the Christ that saved us and redeemed us. All right, I mentioned yesterday about I would like you to memorize Romans 12, verse 1 to 3. Somebody like to stand up and quote that for me? Okay. I'm going to ask you another question. I appreciate the two that were honest about the fact that it was maybe not going to be a good day, but Mark, you should not have called them out. Now, they won't be honest if you do that. So I'm going to ask you some questions now. And I'm not going to call you out I want you to be honest about it. How many of you know the passage, but you're a little afraid to stand up and say it? Okay. I'm glad you're honest. And I'm not going to make you do that, but maybe we could talk about honesty. You're honest. Maybe we could talk about pride. You know, why do you not want to stand up and say it? You might misquote it, and if everybody's looking at you, it's not so far from me myself, okay? The speaker, he's supposed to know what he's saying, but I get scared when I'm up here too. I'll make a dunce out of myself, so you pray for me. But that is the battle that you want to fight, and you want to win that battle, because it was a hard struggle for me, and I'm going to talk about that on Friday. That battle of who you are, your reputation and your honor, lay that thing down and you can be the power of the gospel of Christ. You can be bold to speak for Christ. So how many times have you met people that you thought you should have said something to them about the Lord and you were afraid to? That's me. I've done it. I mean, we've all been there. Come on, we have the gospel. We have the message they need. Let's be willing to give it. Would someone want to share a testimony of something that you have been, that the Lord has shown to you that you need to give up and surrender? Anybody want to share that? Listen, I'm not a fellow to force, and this is another lesson I'd like for you to understand with the memorization. I don't know what human nature is like, but sometimes it just seems like we need to be forced to do things to get it done, you know. So that's just something for you to ponder and think about. Okay, Brother Carl mentioned that if he doesn't get done on Monday, he always has Tuesday to do it. Well, my position in teaching Bible school is I feel like on the next day I have to correct everything maybe I didn't say right or didn't get explained right. So I go home and fret about, I don't think I came through quite right. So that's more my problem than trying to get it all in. So I'm going to look at this again. I wanted to talk of one more thing. The surrender. And Brother Andrew, he gave his heart to the Lord yesterday. And I want you to know that salvation is just so beautiful and so simple. All it is, some people think, well, I got to get things squared away first before I just commit my life. No, no, you just come to the Lord how you are. You say yes to Christ and He's ready to pick you up. There was a fellow who gave us these cards, and when he gave it to me, I thought, well, this is pretty trifling. This is pretty simple. But I've been carrying this around in my Bible, and I bump into it every now and when I leaf through it. Life is pretty simple, actually. You're either going to say yes, Lord, or you're going to say no. Isn't that pretty simple, actually? And that's where we're at. When Christ says, Spirit says, You need to do this. You're going to say, you don't say it audibly, but you are in your mind are saying, yes, Lord, that's right. Or you say, no, that's about how simple it is. Okay, so I'm going to try to again explain some of this. And I think illustrations help. And so here we have this graph. Here's the world. And here's Christ. Okay, yesterday I talked about from Romans 7, what I would, I don't do, and what I hate, that I do sometimes. The important thing here is what I would. Okay, here's Christ. This is what I want to be. And I could write a lot of things up here. I want to be kind, mercy, forgiving, pure, content. That's what I would. That's my aim. Okay. All right, let's say that you're a young Christian, and maybe you didn't grow up in a Christian home. Maybe you weren't taught some of these basic principles. And I'm going to stress that today. We're going to get to Romans chapter 2 and Romans 3. And I want this to come through, that you value your Christian upbringing. Hold to it. Because some have not had it. And I don't know you people. I don't know where you're at. And some of them maybe didn't grow up. And that doesn't make you less of a person. But there's some characteristics sometimes that what I have seen is that one of the strong points in Anabaptist homes, Mennonite home, well, you want to go through the whole gamut of Amish, Orning, whatever, they're taught to work. That is an extremely valuable characteristic. And some people don't know how to work. They don't know how to clean house. They don't know how to cook. They don't know how to bake. Or they just don't, because they weren't taught that. It's not that. And I have learned also that I got to be careful how I say this. We are taught in our Christian homes to be forgiving, taught to share, taught to be nice to each other. A lot of those characteristics aren't taught in people. But let's say you're here, and you struggle with anger, you struggle with jealousy, you struggle with just being nasty to people, okay? What counts is the direction you're going. I'm not so much concerned where you're at. If you start here and you go that way, if you start there and you go that way, where are you going to end up at? Christ. Okay? Supposing someone here is from a good Christian home, and he's been taught all these practical things of life, but he's going this way, where is he going to end up at? Have you ever watched them meet in the middle? They look the same. Okay, so what I would, is that my problem? Am I doing something wrong? Sounds like it's echoing. And this is what I would and what I hate. Okay, that's what I'm trying to convince us. I don't care where you're at on your walk, but I want you to be, you know, to go that way. You have to be honest with the person you are. You have to love the truth. You have to love Christ and hate the world. What we're trying to understand is the inward man, the inclination of your heart. What is driving you? What is the thing that's calling the shots in your life? Psalm 139, 23 and 24, search me, O God, and try me. Not always flip my mind, so you probably search me, O God, and try me, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way of everlasting. Hebrews 12:1. I beseech, my memory is failing me. I beseech you therefore, brethren, lay aside every weight and sin which does so easily besets you. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despised and ashamed, and sat down at the right hand of the Father in heaven. We want to allow God to search us and see in our lives the thing that is not what it should be, and lay that aside, looking unto Jesus. Paul said, not as though I'd already attained, either already perfect, but I follow after, and that's what I want for you today. What Satan wants us to do, and this is Romans 1, okay? He wants us to be right here and be very comfortable. The way we do that, this is Romans 1, the way we do that is we begin to say, God's law doesn't matter. What God says, it's not important. Nothing really counts. Nothing really is important. And we're sitting right there and we're okay. Have you ever heard anyone say that, well, I don't really care where you're at. As long as you love Jesus, it's okay. And we have too much of that philosophy in our time. What I want you to do is to look at your life and say, I want to be more like Christ. I see myself as I am, and I want to grow into Christ. The goal here is to be like Christ. That's what we're aiming for in this whole thing. What are your goals? What are you driving at in life? I want to look at these. Finish here in chapter 1. 29 to 32. Let's just read these verses again. Being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whispers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. What Satan wants you to do is feel very, very comfortable in your sins. What Christ wants you to do is begin to look at these things and say, no, I do not want these things in my life. Examine our goals and where we're going. What I want us to do, is see which direction we're going. I'd like to just talk about some of these things. If you're going the wrong direction, again, you're going to suffer the horrible fruit of unrighteousness. And I could look over all these issues here. I just like to mention the one here, unrighteousness, fornication. Moral purity is a treasure that many people do not have. And if I could lay out for you all the benefits of moral purity, this is one of the things where in a society, we could talk a lot about Christian churches that have no guidelines at all on modesty, on purity, and any of that kind of thing. And as long as you love Jesus, it doesn't matter. It does matter. You don't want to bear reap the reward of impurities. It's a real treasure. If I could somehow lay out to you, you're young and you're not married, and some of these things do not grip you, or the understanding does not come to you like it would if after you're married. Purity is a beautiful foundation for a marriage. Purity will give you beautiful relationships among each other. Impurities are so destructive, they destroy the very character of a person. Somehow, if I could impress upon you the beauty of that thing, and if I could tell you it's not easy. Anybody here would understand and agree with me. It's going to take the power of God. It's going to take a careful examination of your life. And I'm going to talk about that more in Romans chapter 6. But it is serious. And you need to get a hold of it. Satan wants you to make you comfortable where you're at. And I want you to look at yourself in a real way and say, I want to grow more and more into Christ. When I talk about Satan making you comfortable, I'm not trying to make you all at once doubt your salvation. You understand that? But you need a proper tension in your life to examine myself and say, is this where I should be? Or am I, do I, just show me myself. Show me who I am. Purge me with hyssop. Make me whiter than snow. That's what my plea is for you. Verse 32, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. This morning, to help you understand your inner man, when I say inner man, it's the inner lady, it's the inner person, okay? Understand where you're going. The question is, he says here that they do them, and they have pleasure in them that do them. Who is it that you admire in life? What kind of a people do you admire? Do you admire the saint that has been lived a faithful life? Or is it someone like a sports hero, somebody that's wealthy? When I thought about heroes in our time, there is a singer that made $1 billion on a tour. Now, this world is full of idolatry. I mean, who would pay that much for that kind of thing? They worship that thing. I'm sorry, the people who worship that, goals are wrong. That's a good way to examine who you're aiming for, where you're headed for. What kind of, and let's take it just in the circles here. And I said I was going to be practical, and I want to be careful how I say some of this, lest I'll have to come back tomorrow and really make things right. But peer pressure. Do you know what I mean by peer pressure? In you, there's a lot of peer pressure. When you get my age, I think it's a little less. It's a different kind of peer pressure. We still fight it, but you know, our peers are different. There's a lot of peer pressure. A lot of you are probably come from different settings, so maybe it's not as much. But usually there's a cool in-group. And I don't know you. A lot of, too often, that cool in-group is on the cutting edge of the fashion world. Listen, do you have respect for that? Or do you have respect for the young men and young women who are serious about following Christ? Who are you looking at? Who's calling the shots in your life? I'm going to get to that a little later too, but this I want to make very practical. See, I know from my perspective, when I have a probably a different perspective than some of you. I'm sorry, we look at each other and we evaluate each other, and sometimes you have to be careful with that kind of evaluation, because what I'm going to talk about that a little later, because you can't always know what you're seeing. I respect the young man that has a decent haircut and looks well put together, and a young lady that has a nice large veil, a modest dress, and she's quietly attired. I've always said, and you can just hang on to some of this, I'll just say what I think, but I always said when I see their hair and their shoes, I can tell you a lot about that person. And I see some young people sometimes and I think, what direction are they going? They scare me. Where are they going? And again, we have to be careful of our judgments, because I am going to rail on the other side too, but they love Jesus, but why do I see all these worldly fashions? There's a lot of peer pressure, and one lady gets this beautiful sweater, and then, oh, she looks so nice, and then I want one of them. Or maybe it's a different cut on the dress, or different tone to give it. Oh, that's really cute. I'm sorry, that's really nice. And then the men... We're just men, aren't we? We're not so much maybe. You know, that has shifted more, that men are more into their appearance than they used to be. We used to not care about our appearance. It's shifting. And I think the effeminate thing is taking hold in society. It is so much. Let's not be caught into that. Men are more into their trucks and their hunting and their boots and their... Okay, I think we should stop on some of that. I'm trying to get you to see, where are you headed? What is your attraction? And this morning, in your setting, in your church, you are either going to be a standout for Christ that pushes that thing towards Christ, or you're going to be a person who is dragging it down into sensual worldliness. Be the man, be the person, the lady that is setting the example for what a Christian should look like and be like. Okay, I could talk a long time again on those who have rejected the law of God, rejected His teaching, but I'm going to go to chapter 2 now. And we're going to get serious about a lot of us right here. He says, therefore, thou art inexcusable, man, whosoever thou art that judgest. For wherein thou judgest another, thou condemnest thyself. For thou that judgest doest the same things. But we are sure that the judgment of God is according to truth against them which commit such things. And thinkest thou this, O man, that in... judges them which do such things and doest the same, that thou shalt escape the judgment of God? Or despisest thou the riches of His goodness and forbearance and longsuffering, not knowing that the goodness of God leadeth thee to repentance, but after thy hardness and impenitent heart treasures up unto thyself wrath against the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God? This is the written to the Jews. Okay, so I said that a lot of you are probably ahead of them. And here's what he's telling you. One of the things you began to feel comfortable about is you look down at this person and you condemn him. How many of you have said, well, he listens to music that I'd never listen to. What are you saying? You're better than him, right? He or she dresses in a way that I wouldn't ever dress. They go places I wouldn't go. You look at the other person. They read books and magazines that I wouldn't. They see and hear things that on the internet that I wouldn't allow that kind of thing. What are you saying? When you do that, you're making yourself feel good about who you are. And you need to be very careful about that type of thing. You look at some lady walking down the street with green hair and you think, look at that, you know, isn't that awful? What we need to do is look at ourselves. You see somebody with this wild young man, and you think, boy, look at him. Isn't he awful? What he's saying here is that the Jews would look at the Gentiles. We'd read that list of wickedness, and I wanted to mention that one in there that will catch us all, whether disobedient to parents. And I thought, you know, they put that right in there with murderers. I'm not a murderer. How about disobedient to parents? And when I lay on my bed last night and I thought about the, whispers, gossipers. And I thought, I think I was talking about people too much yesterday. And I should confess that. See myself in this whole thing. What he's talking about in chapter 2 is somehow we get to feeling pretty good about who we are. And this morning, I want us to take a good, honest, inward look at myself. See what's driving me, where am I going, and what are some needs in my life that I need to correct. And just pause before the Lord and say, teach me, Lord. Show me those areas that are holding me back from flying as an eagle, soaring with Christ and experiencing what He has for you. When we are dishonest about who we are and we're pointing fingers at everyone else, we will feel secure in who we are. One of the things he's saying here is that when you judge, when you are condemning others, judging others, you're guilty of the same thing. And here's how it works. I don't know if I fully understand that. But when you have a particular problem in your life, and you know how that particular problem works, you can see it in other people that have the same problem. Have you ever talk to somebody that does somehow they come out and just rail on people? Be careful of that person, because that person has probably got the same problem. I've watched that up. Just want to rail on other people. There should be in us. And I thought about the publican and the Pharisee. The publican, he went up and he said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. The Pharisee said, Lord, I thank you that I'm not like this other fellow. And it says that the publican went down to his house justified, clean before God. You can sit here and just think about other people and how bad they are and rail on them, and you can feel good. This one has always bothered me because we have a soup kitchen in Chambersburg, and yeah, there's poor souls in there. I'm sorry, they're poor souls. And we have done work into prison for years. And I often go home and thank the Lord for my family, for my teaching and who I am. And I'm not sure if I'm acting like a Pharisee or not. But I just thank the Lord that He delivered me from all that. And I think there's a place for just being thankful for that and seeing where sin will take you. And I'm not being superior to them. If you're superior to them, you will never be able to reach down to them and pick them up. And I'm going to talk about that again on Friday. Mind not high things. Don't pursue the high things or the honors of men, but reach down to the men of low estate. That's the call of Christ in our lives. Let's read Romans chapter 2, 6 through 10. This will be my concluding comments at the end, but I'm going to enter it in right now also. This is what we were talking about. Who will render to every man according to his deeds? And what he's telling the Jews and the Gentiles is simply this, that the Jewish people looked at the Gentiles as awful, and the Gentiles looked at the Jews as awful. What he's saying is, in this whole thing, if we could sum it up, you will receive the reward of your doing. I don't care if you're in a conservative Anabaptist church. If you do the same things they do, you're going to receive the reward of your doing. And we could talk about the reaping, the reward, but let's finish here. Who will render to every man according to his deeds, to them who by patient continuance and well-doing seek for glory and honor and immortality, eternal life. That's what I want for each one of you here today. The direction you're going. And it's sometimes when you're, maybe you have an anger problem, okay? Let's talk about that. Well, that's a hard one to deal. And you have trouble getting angry. And you confess that and you don't want to be angry. And then you get angry again. And you confess that and you get angry again. And you confess it and it gets to be a cycle. Don't give up. Here's what he's saying. Be honest about your problem. He says, who by patient continuance, keep at it. If you're here and your struggle, let's say after 5 years you're there, okay? Don't quit. You're at least going the right direction. You want that. You want to keep going. I think what I want you to get a hold of is press on. Life can be very discouraging sometimes. Sometimes, even after you're 68 years old, you think, does anybody care about Christianity? And you just, is this real? Is this meaningful? Is God real? You know, yes, He's real. Keep pressing on. Here's the other one, but verse 8. And if you're here, I want you to see this. This is what I want you to see. But unto them that are contentious and do not obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, indignation, and wrath. If you're fighting against God, don't. Fighting against your parents, fighting against your church, you're just contentious. You ever see anybody that you can't tell them anything, especially the truth, and they're just in your face, just contentious? Some of these things, you know, I talked about what I see and what I care, what I worry about, but you can't always see that. But you know in your heart that you're fighting against God. Stop it. Don't fight against God, whatever you do. Tribulation and anguish upon every soul of man that doeth evil, the Jew first and also the Gentile. And what I want you to know is that there are people sitting in plain churches that are fighting against God. And they think they're safe. They think they're comfortable because they're in a plain church. Okay? And I'm going to talk about that a little later. This was where I was. Maybe I shouldn't say it quite that way. There are some who in ignorance do not understand. I'm going to read these next verses and I'm not going to make a lot of comments on them. Verses 11 through 16. For there is no respect to persons with God. God doesn't say, this is your special thing. God has no grandchildren. They're all sons and daughters. I've said it this way. I have to reword it. If you were a little boy and just grew up in the streets of New York City, did you ever read the book Nicky Cruz? Yeah, that's quite a book. God loved him just as much, and the grace of God was just as sufficient for him as what those of us who grew up in Anabaptist communities. And there are some Anabaptist communities that are very steeped in dead tradition. God loves them too. There's a different kind of conversion needs to happen in that whole thing. But God has no respect of persons. For as many as have sinned without the law shall also perish without the law, and as many as have sinned in the law shall be judged by the law. For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. And get a hold of that one. People who do count, that's what counts. For but when the Gentiles which have not the law do by nature the things contained in the law, these having not the law are a law unto themselves, which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and their thoughts meanwhile accusing or else excusing one another, in the day when God shall judge the secrets of men by Jesus Christ according to my gospel. And I don't feel like I have time to go into all that and to lay that all out to you. We need to be very careful of our judgment of the whole world as to where it all fits into God's plan. And a lot of these have to do with the commandments of the scriptures. Your anchor is the church that takes the commandments of the scriptures and say, this is what the Bible teaches, this is what we will practice, and let God judge all them out there that have not the law of God. Okay, if that's enough said, and that was pretty much of a heavy comment for you to figure out all one time without me laying it out. But I don't think it's necessarily so important. But that has been a tripping point for many people in our time. Well, if they can be a Christian and be divorced and remarried, then that means it's okay. If they can be a Christian and not wear the head covering, then that's okay. If they can be a Christian and go to war, that's okay. We'll let God judge them. We'll take what the Bible says and we will believe it. I wanted to do one more thing on chapter 1. Let's let that go for now. We'll catch that later. I want to get to this next section. And this is me and you in Christian churches. Behold, thou art called a Jew and restest in the law. Okay? You are law people. You believe the law, the commandments of Scripture. You rest in it. And makest thy boast of God. Okay? You say you are Christian because you keep God's law. And art confident. You see these words here? You're confident that thou thyself art a guide of the blind. That's a light of them which are in darkness, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes, which has the form of knowledge and of the truth and the law. Thou therefore that teachest another, teachest thou not thyself? Thou that preachest a man should not steal, dost thou steal? This is to me. James says, be not many masters, because you're going to receive the greater condemnation. One of the easiest things in the world to do is stand up here and tell everybody how to do it. Okay, I can tell you the scriptures. The hardest thing for me is to do it. You need to get a hold of that. It's easy to say what should be, but to do it is different. And this is important. Thou that sayest a man should not commit adultery, dost thou commit adultery? Thou that abhorrest idols, dost thou commit sacrilege? Thou that makest thy boast of the law, and thou through the breaking of the law, dishonorest thou God, for the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles through you, as it is written. When you make the declaration, which I think you should, identify with the people of God, don't we want to identify that? It seems today that we would rather identify with the world than the people of God. There is still an image that represents the people of God. Do you want to identify with them? That's right and good, and you should. But when you identify with them, and then you live like a heathen, you are blaspheming the name of God. We had a young lady, and it was part of their custom and practice that they wore the head veil from little up, whether converted or not. She did make her commitment to Christ, but that was a different story. But this girl was living a wild, rebellious life with her head covering on. Seems like the sisters bear the identity more than the men. But listen, you can be seen. I can go in town and not even know that fellow and say, he's a Mennonite young man. You know what? One of the things, here I am getting into this practical stuff again. You know one of the things that identifies them? I didn't look around. A button-down shirt will put you in a different camp. Listen, it's one of those dumb little rules that we have made at St. Thomas, no t-shirts by themselves. And I don't know where your standard is, and it doesn't matter. But identify with godly people. That's right and good. I'm going to look at that later. But there are some people that dress nicely on Sunday, but through the week, they look like something else. There was a Bible school, and I won't tell you which Bible school. It wasn't any that you probably even know about. This was I won't say that either. But I get in trouble here. Those people went in there, gave beautiful testimonies. They talked about the Lord. They were just, and then they went out. This was a story I heard. I think it's true, and I believe it. Went out on the volleyball court and cussed and swore and were nasty to each other. Whoa. Is it in their heart? Did it get down in their heart? Was it a performance? Yes. Listen, the real you is what you are Monday through Saturday. And if you have a big disconnect between what you trying to look like, which is good, and that, you've got a disconnect. And we'll talk about some of that. I want to talk about my own David, King David, committed adultery. He was the king of Israel, the king of God's people. And Nathan said, you have given the enemies of God an occasion to blaspheme. And then they just, it's been a long time ago, made a movie of that whole thing. They're still blaspheming the name of God because of it. David was forgiven. There is forgiveness in this kind of thing. What I want you to know is you are bringing disgrace to the name of Christ. I want you to let the world know by your appearance that you are a Christian, but I want you to live like a Christian. Don't get your security, don't get your confidence in just your church you are and the appearance you are. And I want to tell you that's the thing that I'll give you my testimony. I'm going to work on this on Thursday, I think. I went to a conservative Mennonite church. But a brother got a hold of me and he began to teach on 1 John 2:15. And there's been a lot of things in my life that I had visions for and ideals that didn't happen. But I got a hold of this one, and it's been true from that time until now, and it's still true, and I'll declare it. Worldliness. I did not understand worldliness, and I'm going to tell you what worldliness is, and then when I get done with worldliness we all have work to do on that. I still have work to do. The lust of the flesh. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. These are not of the Father, but are of the world. See, I wasn't worldly. I dressed plain. I was not worldly. Worldliness, the lust of the flesh, sexual immorality, impurities, covetousness, the lust of the eye, to have, possess, the pride of life as to who I am, my reputation, my honor of men. That was the thing that began to hit me between the eye. Look, you got some work to do. You are worldly. And those are the things that will drag you down. Again, moral purity. If I repeat myself on that 10 times during this session, I make no apologies. I always said that the list of sins starts with adultery, and I don't think it says adultery, fornication, uncleanness, and I don't think it's because it starts with the letter A. I think it's because it's serious. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Our verse in Romans 12, be surrendered unto Christ, and be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is a good and acceptable and perfect will of God. You will not sense the will of God if you're just living in immorality, covetousness, and pride. And I think I'll just wait for that to later. But here's what I want you to see. I'm going to read down here. For circumcision verily profiteth if thou keep the law, but if thou be a breaker of the law, thy circumcision is made uncircumcision. The Jews were circumcised. They had a real security in that thing. This is what, and it is not going, only if they keep the law. Therefore, if the uncircumcision keep the righteousness of the law, did you get a hold of that righteousness of the law? Shall not his uncircumcision be counted for circumcision? And shall not uncircumcision, which is by nature, if it fulfill the law, judge thee, who by the letter and circumcision does transgress the law? For he is not a Jew, which is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision, which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew, which is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, and not in the letter. Now those were a lot of words there, and you can study them later. This is the one I want you to get a hold of. This last phrase. And when you can decide in your heart where you're at with this thing, then you have figured out what's driving you, what's motivating you, whose praise is not of men, but of God. You want Christ's honor upon your life, and you want nothing but that. That's utmost in your life. When I say this, I want to be careful. You really don't care what men think of you. Now that's a little bit heavy, because we do care in the brotherhood what men think of us and their counsel and their input. But I want Christ's praise on my life regardless of what happens. I appreciate the brethren back there, my age group, and I want them to think well of me. But if Christ tells me you do this, I have to do it regardless if Carl thinks I'm off track. Sorry, Carl, that's just how I feel about it. And I want you to get a hold of it. And then we're back to that peer pressure thing. If everybody thinks you're a plain Jane. I wrote this down. I hope nobody's name's Jane here, but that's just a term we use. If they think you're a plain Jane, you don't care, because Christ is saying, do this, and you want to do that. Men, where are you at? You know, are you going to be a standout for Christ? The grandest thing, and I'll get this tomorrow, Abraham was a friend of God. The grandest thing you can ever find in life is to have Christ's smile of approval in your life and to be a friend of the Lord Jesus Christ. You want to be His friend. You want to please Him. You don't have sons yet. But I have sons. They didn't always behave themselves. But when I knew they wanted to please me, you're a good son, even if they made mistakes. Even if I tell them to do a job, let's say it that way. If I tell them to do a job and they were desperate to please me, it was a good job whether they messed it up horrible. They wanted to please me. And that's what God is looking for in your life. Do you want to please God? And He knows that. He knows if you want to please Him or not. And that's what counts. That's where I'm at here with this thing. You might be way down here, but I wanted to mention this. This guy up here is looking down with criticism. I wouldn't use that error. You might, if you want to please God, that's what counts. I want to look at these other verses here. These are very important. And when I tell you all this, the Jews and their wickedness, the Gentiles and their wickedness, then he asked this question, which you need to get a hold of. Paul knows what he's talking about, okay? I don't. Well, later we'll see that, yeah, God forbid, let God be true and every man a liar. That's where the place we have to come to, that God is true, I don't know, and every other man's a liar. But Paul says this, what advantage then hath the Jew? Ponder that question. What advantage? And then this is what he says. Much every way. Okay. I'm gonna lay this out to you. And you don't raise your hand on this. Some of you have probably grown up in homes where the mom and the dad were law-abiding. They were very strict. They had, Brother John mentioned this, the fear of God, they had structure, they had order. But maybe they didn't live out the Christian life the way they should have. And I don't know if you had any homes like that. But if you are, I can tell you what's going to happen to you. You're going to say, I want nothing to do with that. I don't want nothing to do with their plain clothes, with their covering, because they were hypocrites. Here's what he's saying here. I'll read this next verse. Much every way. For what if some did not believe, shall their unbelief make the faith of God without effect? And I'm going to interpret that for you. People who say they believe or they kept the law of God and didn't live it, does that mean that the law of God is not important? No! Because they didn't live it out doesn't mean that the law isn't important. Let's say that your mom was very strict on having a modest dress. But let's say she had this anger problem and she was nasty. I don't know why I'm working on the women. Let's work on the men. Okay, your man had a father that was rigid. Oh, I wanted to mention that. How many of you have read Sylvester's Journal? Did you ever read that book? That is a horrible book. I mean, there is what I'm talking about. He was the strictest dad. You know what? I'm getting myself in trouble again, but we're going to have the German Bible. Okay? I forget what all he did. But he was an ungodly man. He had a mistress in town. He drank, cheated people in business. Okay, so if he was your dad, would you get a German Bible? No. But there was nothing wrong with some of his conservatism. That's what happens. You begin to blame the conservatism. You begin to fault the command because your dad didn't live it out. Don't do that. That does not mean, well, here's what we want. We want to, again, God's law is God's message to us to get a hold of what he wants to tell us. God gives us this law not for do it, but to understand what it means. And if your dad didn't understand what it means, it doesn't mean that the law is not still intact. You get a hold of that and you understand what it means. I didn't finish. I should have just finished it. If mom is angry woman and she believes in modesty, that does not mean that modesty is wrong, but sometimes we react to it because that's the way she is. And there would be so many things. And I see this all the time. If we can get set free from all those stiff laws that the church makes, we'll just be wonderful Christians. I got a couple of minutes yet. I want you to get a hold of that. I want you to... Okay, the prodigal son. It says, not many days afterwards, he gathered all his things together. Okay? That was a new thought to me as he gathered them all together. He had much. He had a home that I think that was a good home, and he gathered all his things together. And you could say that it was his possessions, but I could also say that it was all the things that his dad taught him, taught him how to work, taught him how to be good. And he took them and he headed out. I wanted to ask you a question on that one. How long was it before he hit the pig pen? We really don't know, do we? It might have been 10, 15 years till he got it all spent. I see young people that have a wealth of treasures from their home, their background, and they despise it, and their eye is on the world, and they just go out there, and they're spending their possessions, their collateral, their culture, they're spending it all up, thinking, oh, I'm good, I've got this all under my belt, I can do this myself. And all along, they're just casting out all the good things that they receive and not realizing where they're headed. I don't doubt that that prodigal son had some good times in there because he was living off all that his father had given to him. If you can get a hold of one thing today, and I'm going to finish here shortly, honor your father and your mother. Obey your parents. God put that in there. Let's just forget the obeying part. We're going to say, if you had a Christian home, we could take a survey of homes. What's a dysfunctional home? I don't know of any parent that ever did everything perfect. Right? Look at all the good that your parents gave you. If you can learn to respect them, respect the teaching they gave you, and honor them. There are too many that cast it aside as if it's not valuable. I'm going to just simply close again. And I want the Spirit of Christ to teach you what is the direction of your travel, where are you going, what's happening in your life. Be honest with the Spirit of God and let Him put His spotlight on you. Some people stay in the shadows. Some people are hiding things from their parents and from their church. And I know that my own life was like that. I didn't want my parents to see my music. I didn't want my parents to see what was happening. I was not being honest. I was come out into the sunshine. Let Christ put His spotlight on you and rise to newness of life. He wants to bless you and give you new life. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this message. We trust that it has been a blessing to you. If you would like additional sermons or a catalog, please visit our website at effortofministries.org. Call us toll-free at 855-557-7902 or write to us at Ephrata Ministries, 400 West Main Street, Suite 1, Ephrata, Pennsylvania, 17522. You are welcome to copy this message for free distribution. This ministry is supported by your donations. May the Lord Jesus bless you.